Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I hope everyone had a happy and blessed and joyous Easter. Amy, how was your Easter?
Well, I went back to church for the first time. And I didn't like it. The sermon was about, you know, feeling, you know, we have to pay for our racism. And, you know, of course, it started with that and led into, the still Trump bashing. Like, God, you guys won. Get over it. Move on. And isn't this about the day of resurrection?
Maybe you should do the same for your church. I mean, this is a church that, a year ago had Black Lives Matter placards on the altar. So maybe that should have been your first indication.
They're still there.
Yeah. 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 So maybe it's time to do a little bit of house of worship shopping. I'll tell you a church that I would attend if I was up in Canada's Alberta province, and that is the church where Arthur Pawlowski is the pastor. Polish church up in Alberta province, and the police came to shut him down.
You tweeted this out, by the way. You guys can look at it at Dan Proft.
Him down at Easter Sunday. A half a dozen police officers, and they entered the church, and they were met by the pastor, and this is how that went.
Please get out. Get out of this property. Immediately get out.
Okay. Get out of this property immediately. Out. I don't want to hear anything. Out of this property immediately. I don't want to hear a word. Out. Out. Out of this property immediately until you come back with a warrant. Out. 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 Out of this property. Immediately out. Immediately go out and don't come back. I don't want to talk to you. Not a word. Out of this property. Immediately out. I don't care what you have to say. Out. Out. Out of this property, you Nazis. Out. Out. Gestapo is not allowed here. Immediately, Gestapo is not allowed.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Didn't want to hear the reason the police were there, knew the reason the police were there. They didn't have a warrant. So get off our property, get out of my church. You're not welcome here.
But it took them, he repeated himself several times, and they're just staring at him like, I don't know what we do, because our lemmings, like, who are we going to follow out the door? What are we going to do?
Well, when they ultimately turn tail, you can almost see the shame in the eyes of, although they were masked, of course, shame in the eye of some of those police officers for having to be there. And the female police officer that's trying to explain why they're there or explain her position, the pastor didn't want to hear. They're torn, I suspect, between doing their job and probably what many of them felt, which is agreement with the pastor. And it's unfortunate that civilian political authorities would put law enforcement in between themselves and the citizen rather than on the side of the citizen, the law-abiding citizen, the faith leader in a community, for goodness sakes.
Wait, at some point in time, politicians are going to have to trust us to do the right thing, don't you think? And it's none of their darn business.
Yeah, the larger point is this law enforcement matter and putting law enforcement opposite the citizen and police being put in between. And that's going to happen. It's happened in this country Fortunately, we have a constitution and we have some courts of law and judges that take that constitution and those rights enshrined in the constitution seriously. That's not the same in Canada. But that's it's a real insight into where this is going, that exchange between the pastor and the police. And ultimately, they left peacefully. But I mean, what you saw there, to me, given the times, was the pastor is sort of a modern-day Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And if you remember, it didn't end well for Bonhoeffer, nor for Germany. And to me, the pastor there at the Polish church in Alberta puts to shame so many of the clergy across the different faith traditions that have folded in with the state, that have served during COVID as sentinels for the state, puts them to shame. They should be ashamed of themselves. They should lower their head in shame for not standing up the way that that pastor did. Because, you know, this is nothing against law enforcement, but when you're wrong, you're wrong. And the civilian political authorities are wrong in Alberta. And unfortunately, the weapon they choose to enforce their unkindness is the police.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Ron in Salem, Wisconsin.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and happy Easter. Amy, you should have church shopped a long time ago with the BLM thing. I go to a church in Racine County. The sheriff will not enforce closing any churches. I've been going there since June. We have about 250 people. One Sunday we had 450 people. And no one wears a mask. We handshake. We eat together. We have people there in their 90s all the way down to 6 months old. A couple of people got sick. No outbreak. No spread. Nobody died. Uh-huh. You should go to a church that preaches the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Nothing more. No politics.
Well, yeah.
Thanks for the call,
and part of the sermon yesterday was, you know, this Easter I'm angry because of the insurrection at the Capitol. Like, are you kidding me? That's what you're angry about? I'm angry that this church just opened up last week, and they said, too, Dan, that they're remaining closed longer because they wanted to redo the floors. And guess what? The floors weren't redone. I walked in the same crappy floors we've always had in that church.
So can I ask the question everybody's asking? Why are you there?
I'm going to be church shopping. But I've been waiting so long for it to reopen. And I finally get there, and then I got travel shamed. And I got to tell you, people, this mask-wearing thing in church and everywhere else in Chicago is not going to end. Not in 5 years. It might go on for the rest of their lives, because there were people in church, Dan, that had never left their houses during this, and people that were healthy and young, younger than me, 20 years younger than me, that never left. And then travel shaming did the sign like I'm the vampire with the cross because I told them that I traveled and I never stopped traveling. And they thought that that was so selfish. How selfish of you to do that.
For the people that haven't come out of their house for the last year, for the people that attend your church, we didn't miss you. Feel free to stay there. Joe in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. I just couldn't bear to register to go to Mass, to make a reservation to go to Mass.
Yep, that's...
So I've been traveling out of the Archdiocese of Chicago and attending Mass elsewhere where I don't have to register. I don't have to wear a mask. And I will tell you, this Easter service Sunday was one of the most joyful times that I can ever recall. It was a true blessing to attend another diocese. And I'm done. I'm done with our Cardinal Supich and the crazy cotton-headed leftists that seem to pull all the levers there.
Yep.
Thanks
That's
for
true.
The call, Joe.
Registering to go to church. You have to register to do anything here in Illinois.
That would be a person at the top of my list in terms of clergy that should hold their heads in shame as compared to per their behavior as compared to, say, that pastor in Alberta you heard from. John in the South Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Again, happy Easter. I hear a lot of people wishing you that. What happened to the sanctuary at a church? Criminals and illegal aliens can hide out in a church and the police won't go in and get them, but they're going to go in and stop a church service. This world is really coming to something. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, John.
That's an excellent point.
Jim in Crown Point.
It's amazing. There's no pushback. It's like you know how the snake will slowly swallow something because they can. Same with our government. They find that they can push and push and push, and there is no pushback. I recommend that everybody take their masks off at once, have a day, and just overrun it. There was a study that these countries that are outside and not obese, they would get it and it would be gone. Their death rate is zero. Look at Google it. Our country is obese.
Yep.
They gained 30 pounds. Everybody gained 30 pounds. Not everybody. A lot of people gained 30 pounds in this pandemic. They are mentally destroying people with this garbage.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Vince in St. Charles.
Morning, guys. I get a lot of strength. Not that I don't need it, but when that priest kicked those cops out of there, I loved it. I don't need strength, but when you hear something like that, it really kind of like, I don't need to be empowered, but I love what he did, and I have tremendous respect for that. And
absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vince. Your courage is contagious, just like cowardice. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey. Good morning, Dan. Amy, thanks for taking the call. Listen, the left is intentionally attacking the church in the different ways like this and everything. And another way is with the they're going to try to make churches have these bathrooms with the girls and boys going together and no perverts going in there with the girls. The whole thing. And this, all these things are examples of what's going to happen. The church is going to be, you're going to see who's the real deal. They aren't going to go along. And the other churches just go along and all with whatever the left does. And it's going to separate the real, the Christians that are real and that stand up for the truths of the Bible. And those that are just going to go along with everything like this and everything. And John MacArthur in California, he's been doing this stuff. He told that governor or something, hey, bring it on. Come after me. He's been doing this for quite some time now.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Craig. Yeah, John MacArthur, evangelical, who has had to rely on the courts because he can't rely on his civilian political authorities. Gavin Newsom was not relenting, but the courts interceded on his behalf, thankfully. So here's the thing. It's just a reminder in this Easter Sunday and in this era of COVID brings it home. Every totalitarian state folds the church into the state. And you have a lot of clergy that are willing participants and some who are not. But it should be a very big concern because the family and the church are the two bulwarks against the state.
It's America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, tonight, starting at 10, right before Hugh Hewitt, only on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and on a very special CBS Sunday morning.
What do we have?
The Hunter Biden interview. He's got a new memoir out. It's called Beautiful Things.
Oh, please.
And he's a sensitive, broken soul who's just trying to get by with the help of a loving family and God and God's graces. Hey, beautiful things. I'm still here. Beautiful things.
On a very special Dan and Amy.
This is the extent of the conversation that this awful correspondent for CBS named Tracy Smith was able to offer in terms of querying Hunter about his business dealings, which is really the issue. The fact that he's a recovering addict, not the issue. The fact that he and that hillbilly family that he's from has traded off their public offices for self-enrichment, perhaps compromising national security. That's the issue. Well, this is the extent of that interchange, or the interchange on that issue. And it was basically, you got anything you want to say about that federal investigation? No, just that I'll be cleared.
There's a current Department of Justice investigation into your finances.
Yep.
What is it about? Can you say anything more?
I can't, but I can say this, is I'm cooperating completely. And I am absolutely certain, 100% certain, that at the end of the investigation, that I will be cleared of any wrongdoing.
You're 100% certain.
I'm 100% certain of it. And all I can do is cooperate and trust in the process.
That's it? No pushback? Nothing?
Well, that's good enough for me. How about you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. It's such a shameful, it's such another good example of how shameful the media is. Oh, yeah. We're going to do this interview because you have a memoir coming out. So we're going to help you sell books. Now, we have to keep up appearances. So we're going to say, hey, what about that federal investigation? And then you say, you know, all I can tell you is I'm cooperating and I expect to be 100% cleared. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the story about your life that we can bet in some string music and, you know, we shall overcome hymnals and so on and so forth. Let's focus on that for the other eight and a half minutes of the interview.
Yeah. And how this goes down normally, they propose, you know, like, hey, we'll offer you up. The publishing company numbers say we'll offer you up Hunter Biden, but just so you know, that Department of Justice investigation, he cannot talk about that. And that you go, okay, fine. And then you get the interview. You get the get. Yeah, that's the cat's meow today, this interview.
Yeah, that may be how it works. That doesn't work. Not if you're anything other than a house organ for the powers that be, which is what CBS has decided to be, like most of these networks. Hunter Biden and that federal investigation, you know, if you didn't want to talk about it, then maybe you don't do a publicity tour around your memoir. But it wasn't just that question that wasn't asked. It was also questions if you want to talk about family, not just about dating his dead brother's widow shortly after his brother's passing, but also the child he had out of wedlock, basically concurrent to his new wife, which was profiled very favorably. I mean, it's just so, I don't know what to say. It's just so disgusting to have to watch this guy. These are low-rent individuals, by the way, this family. This family is a bunch of hillbillies, and I say that in the negative way, not the positive way. They're grifters, low-level grifters. That's what they are.
And they have no boundaries. I mean, you're dating your brother's, your dead brother's wife, and then he, according to Daily Mail, or Daily Caller, excuse me, at some point in time, was texting her sister-in-law, Haley's sister-in-law, and sexting and sending pictures back and forth.
Also not asked, but hey, look, with respect to the brother's widow, mm-hmm. Hey, we were grieving, and we thought we could find a common love to overcome the grief.
After Bo died, you started a romantic relationship with Hallie, his widow.
Yep.
When the news of that broke, how did people look at you?
I think people were confused by it. And I understand that. I mean, I really do. To me, it's not something that is difficult to explain because it came out of a real overwhelming grief that we both shared. And we were together and trying to do the right thing. And that grief turned into a hope for a love that maybe could replace what we lost. And it didn't work.
Gross. Your cousins are now your stepbrothers and sisters.
You know, love wants what it wants.
And he was still, by the way, still married to his estranged wife, Kathleen, at the time that he started this relationship with Hallie.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle turned dad on the next afternoon special.
Yeah. The question of all the questions that are actually germane here, since we're talking about public offices and a taxpayer-funded family and what they're doing with the power they enjoy. So including on Burisma. Was it a mistake? Mistake to join the Burisma board? You know, he's just a babe in the woods. He's naive to the ways of the world.
Right.
He had no idea it would turn into what it turned into.
I don't think I made a mistake in taking the spot on the board. I think I made a mistake in terms of underestimating the way in which it would be used against me.
And but you must have seen the optics. Even back then, you must have known. I mean, how could you not have foreseen that this was going to look bad?
Because I really didn't. I'm being as honest with you as I possibly can. All I know is that not one investigative body, not one serious journalist has ever come to the conclusion that
I did anything wrong or that my father did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm. No,
any questions? You're probably thinking, were there questions about what Tony Bobulinski, his former business partner, had to say about the interactions that included the big guy?
Yeah.
Was that referenced from his interview with Tucker Carlson before the election? No, of course it was not.
Well, why didn't she say, hey, did you, you know, split the profits that you made at Burisma with your dad or your uncle? Because he got millions of dollars. You don't have a crack addict be in charge of millions of dollars. That's ridiculous.
Well, all of these questions and lines of inquiry could have been pursued, but they weren't because we were too busy joining Hunter on his path to recovery. And, you know, it's about it's about family and love overcoming all. That's the Hunter Biden story.
Hunter Biden says he's rebuilding now and sober since he married South African film producer Melissa Cohen in May 2019. If his story means anything, he told us, it's that the only thing more powerful than a monstrous addiction or eviscerating grief is a family's love.
Maybe I'm being too cynical. Maybe I'm not the silly heart that we should be. Now, we should be rooting for Hunter Biden and the Biden family together as a unit, right? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I mean, what a fluff piece. And CBS is a suck toy to the Bidens. That's there's no other way to describe it. It was nauseating.
He's just a humble, lovable businessman who's made some mistakes in his life. And he's trying to put together. Oh, yeah. By the way, that laptop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How's that laptop coming? What about those images of him on the laptop?
Could be him. Not sure. Has no idea.
Was that your laptop?
For real? I don't know.
I know, but
but
you know
that
this is.
I really don't know what the answer is.
You don't know yes or no if the laptop
I don't have
was
any
yours.
Idea. I have no idea.
So could have been yours.
Of course, certainly. There could be a laptop out there that was stolen from me. There could be that I was hacked. It could be that there was the. That it was Russian intelligence. It could be that it was stolen from me.
And you didn't drop off a laptop to be repaired in Delaware?
Not that I remember at all.
Oh, there you go.
So we'll see.
That means he dropped it off in Delaware to be repaired.
Well, by the way, NPR, you know, some of these paragons of objectivity, these important, serious news organizations, they're not propagandists. NPR has started to slowly, gently walk back some of their pre-election coverage on Hunter Biden. Fox News caught it this weekend.
6 months after NPR published a review of Hunter Biden's memoir, Beautiful Things, they're issuing a bombshell correction to the story after falsely claiming that the story about Hunter's laptop was, quote, discredited by intelligence agents. The review initially read the laptop story was discredited by U.S. intelligence and independent investigations by news organizations. Now, the stunning mea culpa reads, numerous news organizations cast doubt on the credibility of the laptop story. No mention of intelligence, nor independent investigations, just news organizations.
Cast doubt. Hunter Biden has doubt that it isn't his. He just said so in his own words. Gosh, was that a story where the New York Post before the election was just tilting at windmills, or was that a story? Not to mention there was that federal investigation that was uncovered that had been ongoing for the better part of a year, apparently still is ongoing. Not to mention, there's still this Durham investigation somewhere in a distant land that has reached no destination, as far as we know. It's just remarkable. It is astounding to watch these pieces.
But anything to get Biden elected. And that's what they did. Anybody made any disparaging remarks against his family? Oh, no, no. We're going to silence you. And that's what Twitter did, you know, to the New York Post story and others.
And remember, that's right. And remember, this is on the occasion of not wanting to set the record straight. This is on the occasion of wanting to make more money based on his position through a memoir.
Yeah.
That's why he's in the news. Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know what? The DOJ has no credibility or no pride at all. But that's not even my point. My point is you guys aren't looking at this in the real way. The real way in the Biden world is, what, 50 years that guy's been in Congress or senator or whatever he has been. So this is almost, let's say, 50 years, 45 years has probably been total corruption. So this is what this kid grew up in. So to him, this is perfectly normal. And taking money from a Burisma company, yeah, sure. Well, why not? They want to give it to me? Yeah, sure. They want to get my father? Yeah, sure. China wants to give me? Yeah, sure. So in other words, this is like normal behavior. Having sex with my dead brother's wife? Yeah, that's what we do here in the hillbilly country, as you call it. So in other words, this is their way of life. This is how they do it, and they don't care. And now that they got the media protecting them, hey, there's nothing to see here, and the DOJ is not going to do one thing against this kid.
Well, you're probably right about that, Ed. I mean, I would think that if I'm Hunter Biden's attorney, you're going to do a publicity tour about a memoir while you're under federal investigation.
Heck no.
I'd be pretty he must be pretty confident that the DOJ isn't going to touch him, isn't he? Don't you think? Pretty confident. And why wouldn't he be? Jim in Sheboygan.
So the grifters in chief, Bill and Hillary, kind of show the Democrats how to work it and how to work the system. They got their power, they became billionaires, and they just continued to work the system. The only difference with the Bidens is they're just not as good at it as the Clintons are. And but they will escape just like the Clintons did. And, you know, probably the DOJ put John Durham in charge of the investigation of Hunter. That's my thought.
I doubt it. And thanks for the call, Jim. It predates the Durham. But regardless, I mean, Christopher Wray, that could be even worse. With respect to the Clintons and the Bidens, you know, this is all laid out, as we talked about during in the run-up to the election, in Peter Schweitzer's book, Secret Empires. Not all of it, but a lot of it with respect to Hunter as well as Biden's brothers, the entire Biden family, which is another essentially political crime family like the Clintons. And I agree. I have no confidence in the DOJ. Obviously, the media is what it is. But it doesn't mean that you can't, again, just in the little pocket of the world in which you live, you can't spread the word. Every time when people want to hold these individuals up, they belong on a pedestal. These are our leaders. Low-rent grifters is what they are. Because ultimately, you know, that tag caught up to Hillary Clinton. Just in time, didn't it?
Yep.
So, you know, make sure that this tag sticks on Biden because it belongs to the Biden family as well. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, just a little bit more Hunter Biden, because I know you enjoy the...
oh, yes. I like when he...
Sentimentality.
Yeah, remember, he's a blow artist. Remember, he's blowing...
Hello.
Because Quinn and I were trying to figure out what the name of this type of artwork is, but we did it here in the studio and we had a competition who blew it best.
Yeah, straw yes. Blower, right?
It's yeah,
like
blowing.
Use straws to blow art and art won't stop calling after you do that.
And Quinn won. He had three flowers under the coronavirus sun. That's what he named his artwork. We'll tweet it out later, but we had a nice competition.
I'm sure it's a breathtaking piece. Hunter Biden... on how Joe calls him and his grandkids, Joe's grandkids, every day. And, you know, hey, it's painful, but hey, beautiful things.
He, like me, knows what it's like not to be able to pick up the phone and talk to your son.
And he almost lost you.
Yeah. 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 It's hard. I'm a Biden. We cry too much.
Stop. Give this guy a hanky.
But
it's okay.
You know, I guess one of the reasons that I'm crying is because... you know, beautiful things. We're here.
Yeah. Yep.
We're here.
Beautiful things. You know what I mean, man? Beautiful things. Look, I'm sorry that...
Could somebody take his man card away?
I understand the Biden family has suffered tragedy, and I'm sorry for the loss of his first wife and his daughter, and I'm sorry that Bo died young of brain cancer. Those are terrible things. I wish they didn't happen. But I'll tell you what, I don't know about you, but I'm a little sick of watching them trade off it for political or monetary reasons. And that's what I saw Hunter Biden do in that interview. Marvin in Burlington.
Yeah, I think the title of his book should have been Life of a Sociopath. But at any rate, I just was, instead of beating ourselves from, we're killing ourselves from within, because I think most of people understand that CBS, NBC can't distinguish between either one of them. They're either TASS or Pravda. Like the Russian populace back in the Cold War, they didn't believe their own news media either, and neither do we. The problem is we just seem to all go along and just sort of live with it. And, it's just the way it is, and we can't do anything about it. Hopefully, in the years to come, people will come to their senses and vote with their brains and instead of being buffaloed by the race hustlers and the political class of people that we're paying for.
Thanks really for the call, Marvin. Appreciate that. The follow-up that Tracy Smith could have asked, he calls the grandkids every day too, including the daughter you had out of wedlock down in Arkansas?
Yeah.
One of his grandkids, isn't it?
Yeah, but that child was not around during the inauguration for the parade or anything. That child was completely left out, which was so wrong.
Beautiful things, Amy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
beautiful things. We're here.
Five kids with three different women.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Will you heed President Trump's call responding to Major League Baseball's announcement that they will be moving the All-Star Game and the draft out of Georgia because of the Georgia voting reform law? President Trump issued a statement, "Baseball is already losing tremendous numbers of fans, and now they leave Atlanta with their All-Star Game because they are afraid of the radical left Democrats who do not want voter ID, which is desperately needed to have anything to do with our elections. Boycott baseball and all of the woke companies that are interfering with free and fair elections. Are you listening? Coke, Delta, and all. Boycott those companies that are doing the bidding of the cultural Marxists." 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
So if you're, ordering a Coke and they don't have an option of Pepsi, just get water? Because that's what I'm willing to do at this point. I mean, they're upset. What, they want an ID for mail-in ballots, and they want to limit the use of drop boxes. Why is that so offensive?
It's arguably they're not really limiting the use of drop boxes. They're mandating them in every county. They weren't in every county last time. Here is what Georgia Governor Brian Kemp had to say over the weekend on the occasion of the decision by Major League Baseball. Do we have Kemp here?
Right here.
Yesterday, Major League Baseball caved to fear and lies from liberal activists. They ignored the facts of our new election integrity law, and they ignored the consequences of their decision on our local community. Georgians and all Americans should know what this decision means. It means cancel culture and partisan activists are coming for your business. They're coming for your game or event in your hometown. And they're coming to cancel everything from sports to how you make a living. They don't care about jobs. They don't care about our communities. And they certainly don't care about access to the ballot box. It's easier to vote in Georgia than it is in New York. Even more ridiculous is that MLB didn't cite a single reason that they disagreed with the bill in their statement.
They don't need a reason. They don't need a reason, although I have to admit the statement that Rob Manfred, who's the Major League Baseball commissioner, in case you didn't know, that he put out is really hysterical.
Yeah, that's great.
It just shows how ham-handed they are in this space. The statement included this quote here. Major League Baseball fundamentally supports voting rights for all Americans and opposes restrictions to the ballot box.
Yeah, what restrictions to ballot boxes?
Well, wait a second. Opposes restrictions to the ballot box. That is an unqualified opposition. That is absolutism. So if you oppose restrictions to the ballot box, then you're not going to be playing Major League Baseball games or the All-Star game in any of the 50 states, because all 50 states have restrictions on the ballot box. In other words, have rules regarding voting. This is how silly it is. There's no substantive position here. This is capitulating to the mob.
Right.
That's all this is.
And also, too, Dan, have they even thought about where they're going to take the All-Star game in the draft? Where are they going to go? They can't come to Illinois because we've got crowd restrictions so severely. They can't go to New York. They can't go to California. Where are they going to go? And they won't dare go to Florida, right, because that's a Republican governor. So what are they going to do? Maybe just cancel the game this year.
Milwaukee has offered. I'm sure others will offer, and they'll find a spot. But by the way, speaking of Illinois, I just thought this was so cruel. I don't know what's happened to ABC7's humanity here in town.
Mm-hmm. What?
Governor Pritzker offers to step up to the plate as Major League Baseball sees new location for All-Star Game. Step up to the plate?
Oh, please.
That's gratuitous. That's fat shaming. That's gratuitous. That's cruel. You might as well say Governor Gelatinous Tub of Goo is chomping at the bit to gobble up the All-Star game and gorge himself on publicity. I mean, that's just offensive. Who would say such a thing?
Well, it's $110 million in revenue that they lost from that. And Lance Bottoms, you know, the mayor of Atlanta, she's happy about the boycott. Oh, really? Okay, your people are suffering because of this decision.
I can't say that I like it, but I certainly understand it. And it is really probably the first of many boycotts of our state to come. And the consequences of this bill are significant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are going to lose revenue. Those hotel reservations are going to be canceled.
Mm-hmm. A little disappointed in Brian Kemp's statement that it was mainly, it was the warning shot to other states that they'll come for you. Yeah, you're a little late in the game for that. If that's not known, then people have been asleep at the switch. But this isn't just about revenue. This isn't just about capital formation and business location in your state. There's something bigger here. It seems like the left gets it. Ilhan Omar, Brotherly Love Spice, one of the socialist Spice Girls from Minnesota there, she was on with Jake Tapper over the weekend, and she put it in no uncertain terms. This is the new way to characterize it. We've moved from Jim Crow to what with respect to the Georgia voting reform law?
I mean, we know that boycotts have allowed for justice to be delivered in many spaces. The civil rights movement was rooted in boycotts. We know that, you know, apartheid ended in South Africa because of boycotts. And so our hope is that, you know, this boycott will result in changes in the law, because we understand that when you restrict people's ability to vote, you create a democracy that isn't fully functioning for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Aren't we one America? Aren't we supposed to be helping each other out instead of trying to punish them if they don't agree with us? I mean, these new laws are not that crazy. I don't mind an ID for mail-in ballots. You have to show an ID to fly on a plane, to buy liquor. Even if you're 80 years old, you still have to show an ID at the Jewels.
A boycott the law because it's akin to apartheid in South Africa.
Wow, that's a stretch.
That's what this is. This is apartheid. So the question, well, how are you going to respond to President Trump's call? How are you going to respond to Major League Baseball? How are you going to respond to these corporations that are advancing the flag for the Marxists like Omar? How are you, and Abrams down in Georgia, how are you going to respond to them? Are you going to boycott their boycott?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36, type in DA Then a quick comment. I mean, what about the PGA? What about the Masters?
We'll get to the Masters. Brian in Oak Forest.
We will.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy Easter. And let me start off by saying I'm a diehard Sox fan, been a Sox fan for 30-plus years. This weekend I sent an email to the Cubs, to the Sox, to MLB. I called the Sox, I called the Cubs, and I called the Players Association, and I told them that this is absolutely disgusting. There's nothing about it that's restrictive, oppressive, or racist. And I know they don't care about little old me, but I will not be watching. It's going to be difficult with the Sox, you know, supposed to be pretty good late this year, but I'm not going to be watching. I'm trying to convince anyone that'll listen to turn them off, because MLB needs to know that Republicans watch baseball too. So that's all I got. Have a great day.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Yeah, the Michael Jordan disposition that Republicans buy sneakers too, that is not the view of these professional sports leagues, with perhaps the exception of the PGA anymore, is it?
No. I mean, how does this suppress the black vote? How? Somebody explain it to me, please.
CNN network, that's allegedly some kind of news network. This is how they characterize the Georgia voting reform law in their coverage. Listen to this. Tucker had this on his program as well. This is just astounding.
Jim Crow is making a comeback. Second-class citizenship for millions of Americans.
Every time I wheel about, I jump Jim Crow.
Jim Crow is also the name used to describe unequal racial segregation rules that banned black people from eating in white-owned restaurants, staying in white-owned hotels, and fully participating in the election process. Now, as hundreds of new proposals to scale back voter participation in elections make their way through state legislatures, the parallels with the past are inescapable.
That was Jim Johns reporting there.
Beginning there, they had minstrel shows on the screen. They had footage, archive footage of minstrel shows. Jim Crow, apartheid. Any effort to prevent voter fraud is akin to apartheid. Jim Crow. Yes, and to your question, Amy, right.
Yes.
Suggesting that black Americans having to present or record their ID for an absentee ballot, for example, saying that is voter suppression is to infantilize black Americans. That's what's actually racist. But what do they always do? They project onto others who they actually are. They are the racists. They are the ones who purport and propagate the soft bigotry of low expectations, and they have to accuse, you know, whitey, Republican whitey, not champagne socialist whitey, of being the bad guy here, because if they don't have a boogeyman, what do they have? The merits?
Right.
The substance? No.
No.
Mm-mm. Since Joe Biden was a big fan of moving the All-Star game, he said so in that interview last week with Sage Steele that we discussed. Jen Psaki was asked about the upcoming 22 Olympic Games in Beijing, if we're going to be talking about boycotting and suggesting that events be moved based on the local politics. Not that I'm comparing Georgia to Beijing, but their standard. What about that?
The president had voiced his support for MLB making a decision about the All-Star game in Georgia. I'm wondering, when can we expect a final determination from the president about the United States participating in the Beijing Olympics, given that he said the Chinese president doesn't have a democratic bone in his body?
Well, I think the U.S. Olympic Committee would play a big role in...
On Major League Baseball here in the United States.
He actually didn't... I don't know if you heard the answer that happened a few minutes ago, where we addressed this, and I answered the question. So, and I give a little more context, but maybe you weren't paying attention to that part.
Oh my God. She is so smug. And
she's terrible at her job. He said, I strongly support moving the All-Star game from Atlanta. That's what he said to Sage Steele. It was unequivocal.
Wait.
Okay. All right.
She's not getting any better at her job, Dan.
She is not.
No.
Cheryl in Hoffman Estates.
Yeah, I want to know why it's voter suppression to show your ID when you have to get a COVID shot. You have to show your ID because we just watched it at work last week.
What happened?
You have to show your picture ID.
Yeah, it's like apartheid.
To get a COVID-19 shot. Yeah.
It's like South African apartheid, Cheryl, isn't it? Thanks for the call.
Oh,
maybe
right.
We should waive the ID requirement for Black Americans. Right? I mean, isn't that what they want?
Yeah.
Isn't that the position of the Democrats? Let's apply their standard across the board. What's the problem with that? Tim in Woodstock.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, I think you forgot that, the water issue. If this prevents one person from being thirsty while they're waiting to vote, I think it really is all worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
But what they forgot about is that there's only a 25-foot rule on that about the water and peanut butter sandwiches. Maybe they could get some local baseball players that could toss something 25 feet to these folks. They'd have to learn how to catch, but I think it'd be doable. But
they're the Cubs. They'd have to learn how to throw.
Hey.
You might have to learn how to throw.
They beat the Pirates yesterday. Woo.
It's like an article. One influential Black pastor. He thinks that this law is so unreasonable, and he says he's quoted as saying, "We will make a movement out of this." He says, "You know something is wrong when you can't give grandma a bottle of water and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich." And until Black Americans stop listening to the condescension of these people, or as you know, the word you used last week, Dan, was perfect. It's the infantilizing of people. It's up to them. It's up to them.
Thanks for the call, Tim. It's a lie. Everything that is said by the left about this law is a lie. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution had to correct the record, felt compelled to correct the record. That says a lot right there. The food and water that Biden is demagoguing, this is in the context. You had Gabe Sterling. We played Gabe Sterling last week, the Georgia official who was a hero for along with Raffensperger, standing up to Trump during the election. Lionized by the D.C. press corps, and now he's just another Jim Crow era relic because he's defending the law, even though he disagrees with some pertinent parts of it. But he went through a chapter and verse on Fox with Hemmer and Perino. This is a lie. The food and water is about electioneering while people are in line. And by the way, there are no lines anymore because the early voting goes so
forever.
Deep. No significant lines where you're going to die of thirst while waiting to vote, for goodness sakes. I mean, give me a break. This is about people, you know, electioneering while people are in line. If you want water, bring a sandwich, whatever. Have a picnic while you're waiting to vote. Fine. This is all cheap racial demagoguery, and it's telling because you know that the CEOs of these big companies, from Ken Frazier at Merck to Ed Bastian at Delta, they know better. They know better, and they're choosing to side on to throw themselves and their companies on the side of the ignorant and the propagandist. Why? And what's the response going to be? Because the sort of the idea of conservatives boycotting these companies, I don't think that's going to be big enough. They're making a decision. First of all, boycotts like cartels are tough to sustain. Number two, these companies are making a decision that the 75 million Trump voters aren't really going to boycott Delta. They're not really going to boycott Merck, and so on and so forth.
Right.
Coke, although you should, particularly
you could.
Because they sponsored that ghastly interregnum in the Final Four on Saturday with Miley Cyrus. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that was, talk about our dancing squares later.
Right. It's total stupid. Lunacy. But they've made the decision that, number one, it's not sustainable in a way that hurts us for any period of time. But number two, they're not our future. We don't care, is what they're saying about people who are of a center-right perspective. Whether that's a 30% of Latinos who voted for Trump or 80% of Black men who voted for Trump, they're saying they don't care. And I think that message needs to be driven home rather than focusing on, you know, don't buy a plane ticket on Delta. Tell people what they're saying. Translate it. Cassandra in Ravenswood.
Hi. Number one, Jen Psaki is there to make Joe Lockhart look good. And number two, let's remember what was said, I think, in the 16th century or 17th. Hypocrisy is the respect that vice shows to virtue.
And LaRoche Foucault, very good.
5 years. Yes, yeah. I knew you'd know that.
Thanks for the call, Cassandra. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Some call me the sage from South Central. Others call me the czar of common sense. But you can call me Larry Elder. And you're invited to join me tonight, starting at 7, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'll tell you what, the CDC,
yeah,
or as our friend Frank from Arlington Heights calls it, the Center for Control.
Yes.
They make me, the CDC functionaries make me long for the straight talk of Beltway politicians. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, the new director of the CDC, Biden administration. Yeah,
She needs to get a grip.
More CDC guidelines trying to catch up with where the public is, not doing a particularly admirable job, announced that vaccinated people are extremely unlikely to spread COVID-19 to others and thus can safely travel with minimal risk, which is why they don't want you to travel.
Yeah, it makes no sense. None of this. Now we can travel, and then if we're exposed to somebody who has COVID, now we don't have to quarantine anymore. And Dr. Fauci said the same thing on CNN with Jake Tapper, too.
Except don't travel.
Right.
Except don't travel. Walensky, fully vaccinated grandparents can fly to visit their healthy grandkids without getting a COVID test or self-quarantining, provided they follow the other recommended measures, prevention measures, while traveling. While we believe that fully vaccinated people can travel at low risk to themselves, CDC is not recommending travel at this time due to the rising number of cases.
Yeah.
You can do it, but don't do it. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it.
But vaccinated people can't spread the virus to someone else. That's what Dr. Fauci said.
But
don't travel.
Stay at home.
Yeah.
Stay at home.
And don't you love our politicians like Dr. Awardi, Dr. Nzike, all of them? You know, we're there at the Cubs game for the home opener. Dr. Awardi threw out the first pitch. It's like, yeah, you keep telling people to avoid crowds, and you're in one right now.
Well, not really. Not with their limitations, although it is, actually the comment that courageously your friend over there at Fox made in response to throwing out the first pitch.
Yeah.
Anita Padilla.
Yep.
This is why no one takes them seriously. Anita Padilla over Fox Chicago, so good for her.
Yeah, and follow her on Twitter.
You shouldn't take those two seriously.
Well, it's
you shouldn't take the Rona Buster seriously. And frankly, unfortunately, you shouldn't take the CDC seriously. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Dr. John Lee, who's a retired pathologist and a consultant to the National Health Service in Britain. Dr. Lee, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hi, good morning. Good to be with you again.
Good morning. I know the CDC isn't your problem, but with respect to pronouncements like from Dr. Walensky, the yes, you can travel safely, please don't travel.
Yeah, we have the same problem in Britain, actually. We have a committee called SAGE, unfortunately, which stands for Special Advisory Committee on Emergencies, and they're staffed with the same sort of people who want to make pronouncements. It seems to me they've become incredibly vested in the narrative that they've created over the last year, and they protect their careers above all else, and especially above putting the public first. And frankly, I think it's a disgrace. I think it's shown the dysfunctionality of the systems we've set up to manage something like this, and we're right in the middle of it still.
Yeah, but so, Dr. Walensky, I mean, she was in tears begging people not to travel. And what are they telling you there in the UK?
Well, the latest thing that they've just told us is that everybody should go and get tested twice a week. Despite the fact that 50% of the population now here has been vaccinated, despite the fact that that's reduced hospital admissions and deaths by over 90%, despite the fact that all the vulnerable groups are now protected by the vaccine, as is pretty clear, even with one dose, and yet they cannot let go of the narrative. I really believe that this is just careers and on the part of people on these committees. They simply won't take responsibility for telling people it's okay to go out. And my understanding of the numbers and the analysis of the numbers that I and others have done in a group called HART, we've got a website, H-A-R-T, heartgroup.org, where we've analysed all the data for the last year. It's a whole group of people, medics and economists and everybody. But basically, the epidemic has now been over for some months. And it's mainly been driven by, you know, false positives from over-testing. And, you know, there's pretty minimal risk to anybody. The biggest risk is actually from all our officials telling us what we can and can't do, it seems to me.
Yeah, the careerism also extends into the field of so-called journalism as well. The story's out just over the weekend in the Wall Street Journal, COVID fourth wave targets the young and the restless. In the Atlantic, piece about the post-vaccination risk. People are engaged in risky behavior at the very moment where they should be, even the vaccinated, where they should be even more circumspect. That just runs counter to what we understand to be true. How should we receive all this fourth wave coverage and the young and the restless jeopardizing our recovery and post-pandemic and getting to the post-pandemic West?
Yeah, I agree with your take on it. I mean, I think it's a disgrace that the authorities are trying to blame our young people for living their lives normally. I mean, surely that's what everybody wants to do. I mean, the biggest myth, it seems to me, throughout the last year that's allowed the lockdowns and allowed a lot of this advice to come out has been the myth of asymptomatic spread. You know, if you're asymptomatic, you're not ill. You don't have any symptoms, and therefore you can't be said to have a disease. But they've invented this idea that asymptomatic spread is a thing and you could put the vulnerable at risk. And in fact, the scientific evidence for this is absolutely minimal. There are in fact only three ways in that you can have a positive test and be asymptomatic. One is that you're incubating the disease, which is actually a very small number of people at the moment. Secondly, is it's a false positive test, and we know from the way these tests have been done that there are an awful lot of those. And thirdly, it's actually reflecting the fact that you're immune. Because if you are exposed to a virus but you're immune to it, what happens is the virus grows in a few of your cells to start with, your immune system stops it, and then it stamps on it. So, but that doesn't mean to say it can't be detected by the PCR test. So what's happening is that by far the largest group of people who are testing positive at the moment are in fact immune people, and yet they're being claimed as A, cases because they have a positive test when they're completely asymptomatic, and B, a risk to the others, for which there's no scientific evidence. So I'm afraid the whole thing has gone down a rabbit hole, it seems to me, and, you know, we're being sold, you know, misinformation and half-truths and scientifically and medically incorrect things by officials who, many of whom, and politicians, many of whom seem to have zero understanding of what they're talking about. So it's just becoming a bigger and bigger mess. I think people have got the right idea. They can see for themselves that the sky is not falling, that few people are ill, that most of the people, unfortunately, who have succumbed to this virus were people with already very low life expectancy. You know, they were already ill, they were already ill with other conditions. And obviously none of us can live forever. That's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
And I really feel it's well overdue that, you know, most people can make their own risk assessments now and let people get back to living their lives
on that basis that you just said, which is really important, the idea that the spike in tests is coming from the immune, the spike in positive tests coming from the effectively immune. We spoke with Dr. Marty Makary from Johns Hopkins last week, who has predicted in writing in the pages of the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere that, you know, we're tracking towards herd immunity in America by the end of April, the combination of those who have been infected and recovered plus vaccinated. And there's no possibility for another surge like these individuals, CDC and elsewhere, are warning, because there's just not enough people who are not immune effectively to the virus. Is that the situation in England? First of all, do you agree with that assessment? And number one, number two, is that the situation in England as well, with 50% of the population, as you said, being vaccinated?
Yes, I agree. I mean, I do agree with that assessment. I think we're tracking towards herd immunity for two reasons. Firstly, a lot of people have had the disease. A lot more people now have had the vaccine. And also, the thing that's been under-recognized for the entire period of this sort of human-made crisis is that a lot of people had pre-existing immunity to this coronavirus, because coronaviruses normally cause 1 in 6 upper respiratory tract infections in a normal winter. And there is cross-reactivity between other coronaviruses and this one. Unfortunately, you know, what we've been witnessing throughout most of this year is a sort of a crash course in viral epidemiology and virology led by political correspondents and aimed at politicians, and they simply do not get it. And unfortunately, a lot of our officials on both sides of the Atlantic and in other countries, I mean, what it really shows us, I think, the dysfunctionality of the systems we've set up to deal with this. Because when you're dealing with something that people don't know about, what you should do is involve the widest range of opinion, the widest range of scientific and medical opinion, so that the politicians can see, you know, where the truth lies, if any, and if there's contention, you know, what they should and shouldn't be doing. What they've actually done is go for a very narrow group of people with a particular type of training, which leads them to believe in, you know, control and corralling the virus and keeping it under control, which is largely a myth for a virus that spreads on the air. And so what we've been witnessing is a great big roll of dysfunctionality of people who don't want to take responsibility, misadvising the politicians, and the politicians who don't understand what they're dealing with simply taking one line and not listening to the range of opinion. And it's all just a big mess as far as I can see. And, you know, it's what I felt was the case last March and April when I first began writing about this. And I still feel I was on the money with this, that this virus, it's a nasty virus, and it did cause a nasty peak last April, May, but it's essentially now been over for 6 months, and yet the crisis continues because we're elaborating, you know, response to the crisis, which is wrong.
Dr. Lee, can vaccinated people spread the virus to someone else, to the best of your knowledge? Or is that not a known fact?
I would think that's highly unlikely, because once you've got immunity to the virus, and the thing is, the vaccine seems to have an efficacy in tests of, I don't know, depending on which one you have, 60, 70, 80%, which is why they want us to have two doses, because they try to catch the other 20% of people with the second dose. But it doesn't mean that when you've had a virus, you're 70% not likely to spread the virus. You either got immunity or you haven't got immunity. The actual, you know, the second dose is about catching the people who didn't develop immunity to the first dose, it seems to me, which is why the first dose has such a big effect on reducing hospitals' admissions and seriousness of the disease. So I think it's highly unlikely that once you've become immune to the virus, which is a large majority of the people who've had the vaccine, that you'll be any risk to anybody else.
In a conversation
that was the basis the vaccination was sold to all of us, wasn't it? And that is the correct thing, as far as I can see.
Right. In a conversation we had with Martin Kaldor from Harvard Medical School last week about variants, since that's one of the other cautionary advisories that the professionals, the CDC types, are issuing. It's about variants, track the South African variant, track the French variant, track the Papua New Guinea variant, until we're not sure if the vaccinations work against these variants. And so this is why you have to stay locked down, or some facsimile of that. And Professor Kaldorf basically said, well, you know, these variants are not monsters coming to get you. It's very likely that the vaccines will have some level of efficacy against all of those variants, if not similar efficacy than they do to the initial strain of COVID-19. What's your view on variants and the concern people should have about these variants that are being widely reported upon?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you've just said. I mean, what we're really suffering is a crisis of awareness of the fact that these things are out there that people didn't know about this before, rather than virology. If we could, like, take a snapshot of viruses around the world now, there would be literally billions of variants of all different viruses around the world, including flu. I mean, so if in previous years we'd have obsessively tried to track the flu virus the way we track the COVID virus, we would have found thousands of variants of the flu virus. The thing is, because the COVID virus is an RNA virus, that has even more variants because of the inaccuracy of RNA copying. So there will be literally, I should think, tens or hundreds of thousands of variants of COVID around the world. And to fixate on one or other that's been discovered by a testing lab somewhere is simply fixating on something that's been discovered by a testing lab. The real picture is that there are hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of these viruses out there. And let's face it, organisms with cells have lived for viruses since the dawn of life. multicellular organisms like ourselves have never lived in a world where there haven't been billions of viruses out there trying to sort of deal with that, you know, trying to infect ourselves. So the fact is our bodies are very well versed and very well selected for being able to deal with viral threats. Every so often a new one comes along and, you know, it causes, you know, a spike in infections and a spike in death like we saw last year with COVID. But then we get on top of it, and it seems to me we're on top of it now. There's little to fear from the variants. It's not to say that a variant couldn't arise that would be super lethal, but the normal direction of travel with these variants is that they become less lethal because the less lethal variants get spread around more quickly, and so we all develop immunity to less lethal variants and we spread them around more quickly, and that's how we reach herd immunity without all of us dying. So I think absolutely, I think the variant story is the latest bit of shroud waving for people who are vested in the idea that we're all going to be kept frightened and kept locked down because otherwise their careers are on the line. And I think it's long, long, long overdue that we, the people, you know, we have to actually say enough is enough with this. The people need to wake up and realise that the sky is not falling. In fact, the worst has been over for quite a long time and we need to get back to normal.
Dr. John Lee, a retired pathologist and consultant to the National Health Service in the UK. Dr. Lee, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's morning answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and we have a number of legal matters to cover with our next guest, Andy McCarthy, but I want to start with Hunter Biden. I just feel like this shouldn't be let go, even if that's the disposition of the DOJ and the FBI and the political class in D.C. and half of the electorate. I just don't think so. His hagiographic interview over the weekend on CBS Sunday Morning, CBS helping Hunter try and sell copies of his memoir, Beautiful Things, on the pertinent points, which are not his addiction, rather his business dealings. Here's what he had to say about accepting that board position on Burisma, having no background in the energy sector.
I don't think I made a mistake in taking the spot on the board. I think I made a mistake in terms of underestimating the way in which it would be used against me.
And but you must have seen the optics. Even back then, you must have known. I mean, how could you not have foreseen that this was going to look bad?
Because I really didn't. I'm being as honest with you as I possibly can. All I know is that not one investigative body, not one serious journalist has ever accused, or has ever come to the conclusion that I did anything wrong or that my father did anything wrong.
Serious journalist? Isn't an oxymoron?
Yeah, these days. And on his laptop, that was discovered, could be, could not be, maybe, no idea.
Was that your laptop?
For real? I don't know.
I know, but you know that's...
Don't know okay. The answer is.
You don't know yes or no if the laptop was yours.
I don't have any idea. I have no idea.
So could have been yours.
Of course, certainly. There could be a laptop out there that was stolen from me. There could be that I was hacked. It could be that it was Russian intelligence. It could be that it was stolen from me.
And you didn't drop off a laptop to be repaired in Delaware?
Not that I remember at all. At all. So we'll see.
For more on this, Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney, Southern District of New York, Manhattan, contributing to National Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, putting your former federal prosecutor hat on, how much fun would you have cross-examining Hunter Biden if you were still a trial attorney?
Oh, well, he's an imbecile, but I think... that's a side issue. What's really disgusting is the media. I mean, she's asking just to know, is it your laptop? And he rolls off the reasons that, it could have been. All right, let's start with this document. Is this your document? Mm-hmm. I mean, why do you never get to, is this your document? And by the way, who's the big guy? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's mm-hmm. right. I look at this stuff and I just think this is much more about the media than it is about Hunter Biden. They took something that was obviously authentic, that the Biden people never claimed was inauthentic. They never said that a single document wasn't his. They went with this idiotic Russian disinformation thing, which, as I pointed out at the time, even if it were true, which there was no evidence, that the Russians had somehow hacked his computer and put out stolen information, that wouldn't make it inauthentic. That wouldn't make it not his. And at that point, the relevant question was, is this your documents, number one? And the overarching compelling question, which nobody seemed to want to ask, including, by the way, the Trump campaign, which couldn't articulate this simple piece. And you had Trump out there like screaming about the Justice Department, screaming about the FBI. But here's the question, politically and corruption-wise, et cetera. Why is it that every time Barack Obama as president put Joe Biden in charge of foreign relations with respect to a troublesome government like China, Russia, or Ukraine, people in those countries connected to those regimes thought it was expedient to pay Hunter Biden millions of dollars? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah, but did Hunter Biden share those profits? Oh, I'm sorry for interrupting. If I was that reporter, I would have asked, did you share those profits with your dad and with your uncle?
Right, but let's start with did you get them?
Right.
But you're absolutely right. And the way you do that, Amy, is you walk them through the document. Like Tony Bobulinski has already corroborated that the document we're talking about matches up with the details of the transaction he worked on. So what you do is you take this document, which is all, you know, if he denies that it's his document, he'll look ridiculous. So, you know, he probably tries like, no, I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But you walk them through the details of it and ask them who the big guy is. But first you say, this is you, right? And this James, that's your Uncle Jim Biden, right? And then, you know, who's the big guy? And let him answer the question. Now, he may give an absurd answer, but at least you've tried. You've walked them through it, and people can make up their own mind.
No more absurd than him smoking Parmesan cheese, thinking it was crack, I suppose. Yeah, it would be it would be nice. And again, why this is the pertinent part, not just because Hunter Biden is a security threat just by walking around, but number two is because going back to Bobulinski's testimony, going back to some of what we have heard from Hunter Biden allegedly on a phone call, is that he implicates Joe Biden in lying about this from the beginning and perhaps being cut in on deals. And that matters since he's the president of the United States, doesn't it?
How is it conceivable that people are cashing in on your name, who happen to be your son and your brother, for 30 years, and you don't know? I mean, there's no reason to think that Biden isn't completely informed about this. And let's remember, we're talking about somebody who for 40 years is a complete mediocre hack who's been wrong on every single issue of national and international importance. We're not talking about like we're dealing with rocket scientists here, right? So you got like tons of money rolling to his closest relatives, and he is in these positions of influence, and they're clearly cashing in on it. This isn't like they turn this into something that's like complex and sophisticated. It looks pretty straightforward to me, which is why I think it's a media corruption story more than we know who the Bidens are. That's, you know, there's nothing new under the sun with respect to the Bidens. And well, I suppose there's nothing really new with respect to the media. But the media angle of this is much more important than the Bidens.
Well, what about the Department of Justice? If there is this investigation that has been going on for more than a year, as was reported prior to the election, not to mention the Durham investigation and whatever netherworld that currently operates. What about those reaching some sort of conclusion in a timely fashion?
Yeah, Dan, and also let's not memory hole yet, although the media will try, this thing that emerged in the last couple of weeks where he clearly lied on his federal firearms background check, which in and of itself is a felony. And that one, unlike some of the other stuff we're talking about, that one's a pretty black and white case, it looks like to me. Now, you know, the China corruption stuff, a lot of that is financial transactions that happened while Biden was out of office. And the issue there, I think, is probably going to turn out to be less criminal than sleazy and, you know, less of a black and white criminal problem than a national security issue, which is a profound national security issue. But the background check is, you know, did you lie on the form or not? And I have to say, you know, if this was the Trump people in the Mueller investigation, the case would already be over. So I'm not holding my breath waiting for the Biden Justice Department to indict Hunter Biden. I just, you know, that's not the way the Obama Justice Department worked. The Obama Justice Department was a very politicized asset. I think we're already seeing that the Biden Justice Department is the Obama Justice Department part two. And the first thing they did coming in was drop the case against, was it Yale that they dropped the case against?
Yeah, the discrimination, you know, suits.
I mean, yeah. It's just going to be, it's going to be as politicized as it ever was. And if I'm right about that, then, you know, don't hold your breath waiting for the Hunter indictment.
Well, sure. Obviously, Hunter is not concerned enough about being queried about it that he won't go on a publicity tour to sell his memoir. So that tells you something. Pretty ballsy for a guy under federal investigation. Maybe he knows something. I want to get to another topic, to Major League Baseball. And, you know, President Trump and others on the conservative side have called for boycotts of the boycotters, effectively going after the corporations that are falling in liege with the Biden administration, Major League Baseball pulling out, and these other corporations, you know, repeating essentially Ilhan Omar-esque rhetoric. With respect to Major League Baseball, rather than boycotting, although, sure, I mean, you know, use your dollars where you get value for them, rather than boycotting, what about revisiting Major League Baseball's antitrust status? I know we've talked about this intermittently before, but seems to me that and Gorsuch has essentially in a previous opinion about 5 years ago sort of indicated that there's a lot of law that runs counter to Major League Baseball continuing to enjoy an antitrust exemption. Why not get Portland Mavericks style independent baseball teams out there on the hustings at the major league level even and move to litigate Major League Baseball's antitrust status? Their exemption.
Look, Dan, I'm all for it. I think we should do every single. I don't understand why they still have a antitrust exemption. I don't understand why, given the billions of dollars that they are making, and a lot of what we've seen in recent days is explainable by the, you know, the amazing income that they expect to get from the streaming rights in China. Of all places, where the voting rights aren't that strong, as it happens. but I, you know, in that, given that that's the background that we're dealing with, why are taxpayers in cities around the country still building stadiums for these guys on, you know, on bond issues where they have to pay the taxes on them for years and years? That's ridiculous. I mean, I don't think they should have. They have such a money-making thing going. And I don't – look, I'm like you guys. I'm not against anyone making money, but God bless them if they, you know, figure out something to make the market work for them. And I love baseball. I've had a love affair with it for more years than I care to say. But, you know, I don't see why the government should be helping them at all and why they should get advantages that aren't available to other people. And if they're going to play these kind of games like they're playing here, where the people they're crushing here – the media doesn't want to talk about this either, but it's like the hot dog guy who wasn't going to have, you know, a couple of days of employment at the All-Star game. That's who they're hurting. You know, they're hurting the little guy in Atlanta making a statement on the basis, you know, for the benefit of woke politics. And they're doing it with public money and, you know, assets that really aren't theirs in the first place. And they're clearly doing it to court favor with the Biden administration because they have a lot going, MLB does. They have a lot going with China, and they have a lot going with other international streams of revenue. So
yeah, it's $100 million. It's $100 million in lost revenue. And you're right, the people are going to be hurting for that. Now, are you turned off?
$100 million just on the All-Star game.
Just on the All-Star game. Right, but Mr. McCarthy, are you turned off of baseball now? I mean, I read your piece when you've been in 1968. You said you got the thrill of a lifetime for a 9-year-old. by watching, you know, going to the Mets game and watching your, you know, your stars, but are you still going to be watching baseball after this?
Well, first of all, I mean, now you've added my age, so there's that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Although she was referencing a piece you wrote.
Right.
I thought she was referring to the fact that I must be senile and we should check the details.
You're also old enough to remember when it was a thrill to go to a Mets game. So.
That's long ago and far away, too. But, I know myself too well, and I'm too in love with it to say I'm not going to watch because I've tried to do that before, and I end up watching. But I'm not going to spend a dime on it. And, you know, there's a lot of people like me. I think baseball is losing their younger demographic, so it's people like me that they need to think about. I'm not saying that's because I'm an extraordinary fan. It's because I'm a fan, and I'm, like, one of these people who can spend money on it and historically do. So if you want to politicize my respite from politics, then – you know, I'm not going to be the same kind of fan anymore. And I think a lot of people feel that way.
I think you're right about that. Of course, as the play, though, as you referenced, like with the NBA, is not the domestic market. It's the Chinese market, which makes it even all the more cynical, their disgusting rent-seeking behavior. And I include LeBron James and the sort of hush-hush about to whether or not Space Jam 2 is going to get wide distribution in China. But I digress. I wanted to get to something else that you talked about, too, on the legal front that you've written about. I've been reading your coverage of the Chauvin trial. And, you know, I think in the minds of most, it's a fait accompli. Maybe the only debate is whether it will be third or second-degree murder, his conviction. But you have written at least one piece suggesting that some of the prosecution's witnesses have not lived up to their advanced billing in terms of helping the prosecutors the state's case, including that retired EMT who testified last week. What's your handle on what has transpired in that trial to date?
Well, I think it's very uphill for Chauvin, in part for the reasons that you've explained. You know, it all comes down to the jury, of course. So even though we think it's a fait accompli, the 12 people still have to decide it, and the prosecutor's got to get all of them. You know, if Chauvin plants doubt in the mind of one person, you end up getting a mistrial, which is always beneficial to the defense in the long run. But, you know, here's why I think it's uphill for Chauvin, and it should be. What the state's best evidence shows is that they kept him in a prone position on the street with Chauvin keeping his knee on the guy's neck for 9.5 minutes. That's what they keep telling the jury, 9-2-9. That's the most important thing, 9 minutes and 29 seconds. And they obviously want to concentrate on that because Floyd violently resisted arrest beforehand, and they don't want to talk about that. But the problem I think Chauvin's really going to have is that the guy had no pulse and was not breathing for the last 4.5 minutes. And even a minute after the ambulance showed up, he kept his knee on the guy's neck. And there doesn't look like there's any good reason for having done that. He wants to convince them that they were afraid that the guy would suddenly come to and get violent again. But when you have a guy who's not breathing and doesn't have a pulse and is handcuffed behind the back, their training, it looks like, is to turn him over on his side so that at least his airway passages are better open. And you try to treat him, especially if he's got no pulse, you know, they're trained to start compressions, and they didn't do any of that. So is it a criminal thing, or is it negligence, which is manslaughter? I think the last 4.5 minutes is very hard for Chauvin.
He is Andy McCarthy, contributing editor at NRO, former federal prosecutor, Southern District of New York, and bestselling author of Ball of Collusion. Andy, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great week.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and Cornel West was on with Don Lamone to talk about the Chauvin trial and race in America. You know, Cornel West is an interesting cat. We've had him on the show before. Oh, yeah. And he's actually a lot more reasonable than he would sometimes appear when he's talking to adult like Don Lemon. But when you have the platform to be a demagogue, Cornel West is happy to indulge, as he did in this interchange.
Do we have what it takes to really acknowledge the rich humanity of black folk, to treat us fairly, to treat us like human beings? Because if not, you're going to lose your democracy. You're going under. You're going fascist. If it wasn't for black voters, especially black women voters, you would have gone fascist under the gangster named Trump.
And
I'm not going to stand there for no 9 minutes and 29 seconds and watch somebody murder my father. No. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about pacifism, and I believe in nonviolence, but I'm not going to watch that kind of murder. I love my brother Charles McMillan. That's why he was crying. That's what his tears were about. He felt helpless. We're not going to do that. Some of us black folk, some of us black men, we're not going to stand there. We're going to have to intervene in some way. They ain't going to kill us like that, and we remain spectators. Because somewhere I read, silence is not an option. I don't stand with the silence. That's the last two sentences of your letter to Drew, your letter to your nephew. But America needs to understand that, too. We got a self-respect. We got a self-defense. And we intervene when you start killing us like that.
Is Don crying?
Yeah.
Dante. Don.
I'm sorry.
Is it that time of the
We intervene out of love, brother. Out of deep love. I'm doing it for my day.
That was a nice rhetorical flourish from Cornel West, Harvard professor. But the waterworks from Don Lemon. here would be my response to Cornel West. Professor West, something like 95% of America thinks Derek Chauvin should be convicted of a crime, convicted of some degree of murder for his handling of George Floyd's arrest. 95%. So I'm sorry, who are you raging against?
Right.
And this seems to be a bit of a recurring theme with some of this identitarian hustle. I'm sorry, who are you raging against? Because fair-minded people are opposed to injustice or the mistreatment of others. What they're not so supportive of is this scam that you're running, you see, whether it's Black Lives Matter pitching their Marxism through the prism of race, or it's the crocodile tears from a Don Lamone pretending that he is still living in 1963 Selma rather than on the anchor desk at CNN making millions of dollars to display his room temperature IQ. For more on this, pleased to be joined again by our friend Dominic Green, the deputy U.S. editor of The Spectator. Dominic, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
The pullback is beyond the Chauvin trial, but everything is injustice and victimization all the time, even when there is no there's no opposition to the viewpoint, as in the case of the Chauvin trial, and it just gets a little bit exhausting. But it needs to be pointed out they're railing against straw men.
They are, and it has to be said, before speaking publicly about it, it might be advisable to actually watch the footage of what happened. So I'm not sure why Cornel West is talking so strongly about it without having actually seen the whole thing. But as you say, 95% of Americans recognize from that footage that a crime seems to have taken place. One of the things I noticed, because my work takes me back and forward between the U.S. and Europe, is that so many people outside the U.S. keep asking, what is going on? Has everybody lost their mind entirely? And the clip you just played, I mean, as you're saying, this is a Harvard professor who's basically putting on a turn. And as you say, an anchor responding by crying as if this is a kind of soap opera. And it is in the sense that it has no great relationship to reality. I'm sure Cornel West will be taking to the streets to fight you, whatever that means, as soon as he has checked his stock portfolio and so on. This is, as you say, a very profitable business, a business of permanent outrage, but it doesn't benefit the vast majority of people, regardless of their color. Well, and I think more and more people are becoming aware of that.
And it would be, it's just the great irony. On CNN's website, CNN story this weekend, the U.S. saw significant crime rise across major cities in 2020, and it's not letting up. What we all know to be true about the 33% increase in homicides across America last year, concentrated in the major cities, disproportionately black men. And Cornel West and Don Lamone and the rest of the left don't want to address the black men being felled in the inner cities by persons other than white police officers. That is something where they do not want to stand and do not want to intervene.
No, they don't. And the numbers are consistent and clear all over the U.S. The people who actually live in cities, black people in cities, do not want the police to abandon them. They actually want the police to be there. They'd certainly want the police to do a better job. I think everybody would agree of that, regardless, again, of their color. So the idea of you know, removing the police being the answer to this, the only person who could seriously believe that is somebody who's basically living in the safe suburbs, where, you know, they can rely on the police to be there in the background. This, again, is a theater, and again, it doesn't benefit ordinary people. And there are so many examples of this from history. You look at the history of revolutionary socialism, which is really what this is an episode in, and it's full of examples of highly educated, affluent people pushing for programs which are disastrous for the lives of ordinary people. I mean, that is socialism in a nutshell. And Cornel West, when you take away the performance on paper, is basically a sort of old-fashioned socialist. And most of the people in Black Lives Matter are also some variety of Marxist or anarchist and so on. They are using this rhetoric and using the past as a weapon against the future. But in fact, every other possible indicator suggests that the United States, since the Civil Rights Act, since the reforms of the 60s, has become a much more lawful and equal place by every possible measure.
Well, speaking of performances, what did you make of Hunter Biden's one-on-one interview with CBS yesterday?
Well, I mean, everybody knows somebody who has had trouble with drink or drugs. And it has to be said that the one thing you don't do is you don't feed the bad behavior. You don't endorse it. And I see this kind of performance from Hunter Biden is part of the problem, which is some kind of insistence on special treatment. He may be the first habitual crackhead never to have gone to jail. He may be the first habitual crackhead to have ended up on the board of Amtrak. So special treatment is what Hunter gets all the way along, and I'm afraid it's to say it's not going to help him at all. And there are serious questions to be asked. And the fact that he said that the laptop, yeah, was probably his, would tend to confirm, actually, that these questions are not just questions about the family life of the Bidens. They are questions which have a real political and security implication, because when I go abroad, people do not offer me a spot on the board of their energy company. They do not offer me an $80,000 ring and say, introduce me to your friends, because the reason is they're not going to gain anything from that. On the other hand, they will gain from Hunter Biden offering this, and it looks like he sought this out. He actively pursued these opportunities overseas as a way of funding the chaos of his life.
You know what you need, Dominic? You need a big guy in your life. I find those help.
It's a big guy, 10%.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I want to go back to something you said. Talk to a man of letters like yourself. It's important to get this perspective. You talked about this is another socialist revolutionary movement and moment in the West, and I agree with that. And, you know, and it includes the educated, the so-called intellectual set, the champagne socialists, as I call them. And they would be wise to, those individuals would be wise to learn the lesson of Louis-Philippe II, the Duke of Orleans, who bankrolled a lot of the early Jacobins in France, only to find himself ultimately done in by those same Jacobins that he bankrolled. And I wonder how much of whether it's going to be in the form of a backlash or in the form of the neo-Jacobins cannibalizing themselves, you think is afoot.
I think that is the classic pattern, and we can see it. A lot of this is really a struggle for power in the upper middle class. It's exactly the kind of people who led the French Revolution, people who'd been to law school but couldn't find an upwardly mobile law career. They're the people who set up the guillotines, you know. And we have pretty much the same here. We have the overproduction of people with too many qualifications and not enough information. And so they're turning their resentments, firstly, against the people who are getting the good jobs. In other words, they're accusing someone who gets, say, a well-paid job in the media or academia or even law. They're accusing them of being racist as a way of displacing them. They're using the same attack to get rid of the generation ahead of them, to clear a few rungs on the ladder. The rest of the humanity, the vast majority of people, are collateral damage in this. And it is true that the people who are most accommodating at the top of the tree end up with their heads in the basket later on. But, of course, they are in the position of the appeaser, as Winston Churchill described him, who is someone who feeds the crocodile in the hope that it will eat them last.
Something else that that extends beyond the borders of the United States, the Western world, what's happening in the religious communities. The performance of members of the clergy during these COVID lockdowns. And I want to play a bit of this Polish pastor, Arthur Pawlowski of Street Church in Canada's Alberta province, and get your reaction to what he did there in Canada and what you think is happening with clergy in the West, the United States, Canada, Britain, Western Europe.
Please get out. Get out of this property. Immediately get out.
Okay. Get out of this property immediately. Out. I don't want to hear anything. Out of this property immediately. I don't want to hear a word. Out. Out. Out of this property immediately until you come back with a warrant. Out. 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 Out of this property. Immediately out. Immediately go out and don't come back. I don't want to talk to you. Not a word. Out of this out of this property, immediately out. I don't care what you have to say. Out! Out! Out of this property, you Nazis! Out!
Obviously throwing a handful of masked Alberta police officers out of his church who came to shut down his church. He threw them out, and they sheepishly ultimately walked away as it became clear he was not interested in their viewpoint. But generally speaking, it seems to me, Dominic, and I start with my own church, the Catholic Church, that most of the clergy of all faith traditions has behaved shamelessly like sentinels of the state during these COVID lockdowns.
I'm afraid, Dan, that you're quite right. And the interesting thing is, I mean, that was in Canada. On Friday in London, a Polish church had a similar scene. The police went in and broke up the services. Perhaps it's not accidental that, a Polish priest would be particularly aware of the resonances of this, because under communism, religious faith was the great resort against tyranny. It was the one consistent thing that was against some of the worst political systems we have ever seen. What has happened under COVID, of course, is not communism or fascism, but it has mean the endless and unthinking often expansion of state power into every aspect of our lives. And as far as I'm concerned, we should all be thinking along the lines of that priest and telling the government where the line is. And the idea that people should not pray is just astounding. I think, the vast majority of decent, sensible people know that if there, as we now have, endless trade-offs between reward and risk, every activity we now do. But are we seriously going to put prayer on the list of things which is not safe enough for us to do, but we're allowed to protest in the streets. This is a preposterous inversion. This is a moral insult to everybody's intelligence. And as I said, we should oppose it. And if Cornel West wanted to use his enormous enthusiasm to good effect, he might direct it towards that kind of cause.
Yeah, and hopefully, because I think they're going to be needed. There are more modern-day Diedrich Bonhoeffers in our midst, like that pastor up in Canada. Dominic Green, Deputy U.S. Editor of The Spectator. Dominic, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Of course, Major League Baseball pulled the All-Star game out of Atlanta, out of Georgia, because of the voting reform law and the draft as well. But that's not enough. You've got a major, literally, golf tournament there this weekend, the Masters at Augusta. And what is to be done about that? It's too late to pull it out of Georgia.
Right.
But there is something that the PGA could do. And former current TV host Keith Olbermann, he's got the answer. This video filmed from the veranda of his Central Park penthouse.
This is Olbermann versus Confederate Georgia. Great. Now, boycott the Masters. Not only has Major League Baseball unexpectedly done exactly the right thing by moving its All-Star game out of Atlanta, but it has just as importantly opened the floodgates and put a target on the back of every major sports event, every major non-sports event, and every corporation doing business with Georgia. As an aside, when baseball announced this, thank goodness I was at a checkup in my cardiologist's office.
Oh.
The next big opportunity to do the right thing is Thursday, the Masters Golf Tournament. It's not likely they're going to move it out of Augusta, Georgia. The course was segregated there until 1990. The double meaning in a former slave state of Masters is also no coincidence.
Oh,
they will play that tournament.
I told you that they were going
to. That does not mean it has to count for anything,
nor
that it
bedroom.
Has to be shown on TV. The PGA Tour should declare that the Masters is not an official event and will not be recognized as a major tournament. And ESPN and CBS should not televise it, nor in Canada should the TSN network.
Mm-hmm. So the PGA shouldn't televise it, don't recognize it as a major event, as a PGA event, delist it. How about that? That's a novel in a approach to... you know, building on the boycott. I like that sort of creative thinking. What do you think? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Now, Olbermann puts this in some context, a dizzying intellect that he could only do. This Major League Baseball, the draft, the Masters, the corporations that have weighed in, and oh, by the way, those who have remained silent, you're on Olbermann's list.
Uh-oh.
We're at war.
More importantly, the light bulbs must tonight go off over the heads of many different groups. Georgia lawmakers, Georgia corporations still trying to talk their way out of this, like Delta and Coke, Atlanta-based corporations who have said almost nothing, like UPS, Home Depot, Arby's. Indeed, everybody
Arby's,
opposed to the Georgia apartheid voting laws, everybody must realize now this is economic war. The goal now is to keep American money out of Georgia until the state repeals these laws and atones for them. Because Georgia is where the forces of fascism have chosen to start this fight. Laws like theirs have now been proposed by Trump acolytes in 42 other states. These monsters cannot be appeased. They must be broken.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
You know, his declaration of economic war on the state of Georgia was reminiscent of that fight he got in with his landlord. Do you remember that one?
Dear Mr. Olbermann, it read, The co-op board, having reviewed your request for an exception to its no pets policy in order to accommodate your cat, Miss Precious Perfect, regretfully concludes that in consideration of the rights of other co-op residents, such an exception is not possible at this time. Sincerely, Richard Lieberstein, co-op president. And there it was, all perfectly legal. Like the 1942 internment of more than 100,000 Japanese American citizens, or the forced relocation of the Cherokee on the Trail of Tears, or the monstrous injustice of our nation's Jim Crow laws. It was all perfectly legal and every bit as wrong, if not indeed more so. Mr. Lieberstein, you speak of considerations of the rights of others. How dare you, sir? How dare you? Where, sir, in any of this were the rights of Mrs. Precious Perfect considered?
Oh, that is Ben Affleck's best acting job ever. But that's Keith Olbermann. So Matthew Berry, who's like the fantasy football expert on ESPN, he tweeted back at Keith Olbermann, shut up, which, and I appreciate the sentiment, but you know what? You want someone as silly, unhinged, and unserious to be the spokesman for cultural Marxism. So I say, Keith Olbermann, keep talking. Good idea on the PGA. I hope it's taken under consideration by President Biden on down, just as moving the All-Star game was. But I want Keith Olbermann to keep talking and keep declaring economic war on the states of Georgia and every other state that he wants to declare war on and so forth. I think it's wildly helpful to have Keith Olbermann as the spokesman. But the point is, as ridiculous a figure as he is, he represents a viewpoint.
Oh, yeah.
That is the viewpoint, more or less, of the C-suite executives he's calling out by company name.
I thought we were one nation under God. We are going to help our brothers and sisters, even if they live in different states.
Lewis in Lake Forest, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. Good show. Real quick, these self-loathers are really funny. They should invent some kind of device where they can just spank themselves first thing in the morning.
Self-flagellation, sure.
I had to show a birth certificate for my kid to get in Little League, but you don't have to show an ID to vote in Georgia. And number three, I don't know if this happened to you guys. Yesterday, I'm opening up my Easter basket, real nice one, and I had a chocolate Easter bunny in there. And I unwrapped it, and on the inside, it had something taped to it. It said, "I deserve reparations."
All right. Thanks for the call, Lewis. I still want to know, though. I don't know if it was resolved. What did happen with Mrs. Precious Perfect and the condo, the co-op board, where Keith Olbermann lives? I just want to make sure that got resolved positively for Miss Precious Perfect. For just perfect. That SNL skit and Affleck was just outstanding.
Yeah, that's good.
Don't get to say that a lot about SNL. Or Affleck, for that matter. Robert in Bloomingdale.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good.
Yeah, the reason I was calling, this is just totally ridiculous. Coca-Cola, Major League Baseball should stay out of state business. Here's an example that I want to give food for thought. If Delta Airlines wants to keep people, getting into people's business like this, okay, how about flying on your airplanes without you using any ID? And that's a question that I like to ask. And basically, it's state rights. What do you think?
Thanks for the call, Robert. I mean, it's there's no question that it's within Georgia and every other state's purview to administer, to set the rules of the elections they administer, which is why, of course, the left is trying to federalize elections to make that no longer the case. I mean, everything that the left has done since Biden took office, starting with President Biden through executive order, is to tip the balance of scales, stomp down on the balance between federal and state, is to federalize everything, put everything under the purview of the federal government. That's the point here. And you do it through inducements like cash, right? $1.9 trillion in quote-unquote COVID relief. Oh, by the way, you take it, you can't cut taxes at the state and local level,
right,
which is unconstitutional.
And being,
unconstitutional and being challenged, but nonetheless, that's an indication of attitude. And, of course, it's the same thing with H.R. 1, their attempt to make the 2020 election the new standard that every state must abide. Yeah, of course that's right. Of course that's right. The question, though, is what conservatives are going to do in response, or just center-right people. You don't even need to identify as a conservative, somebody who's sensible and fair-minded. What are you going to do in response to all entities, businesses you patronize, the teams you support, the church you attend, all of those entities folding in with the state? What are you going to do?
And they're not going to cancel the Masters. And I told you, remember when they, now they don't say master bedroom anymore because that's racist. You say the main living quarters or the main bedroom. I remember when I told you, I go, they're probably going to have to change the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the Masters to what? Formerly known as the Masters.
Yeah, they'll make it a symbol.
Yeah, oh, that's right, like Prince, yeah.
The Jim Nance Open.
There you go.
Todd in Lake Geneva.
If I'm not mistaken, aren't three quarters of the caddies all black? And they're thrilled to be there. So I say, hell no, 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 hell no.
Thanks for the call, Todd. Yeah, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. But, yeah, I mean, the argument about that we talked a little bit about with Andy McCarthy, that with whether it's Major League Baseball's All-Star Game or the Masters, these things you want to cancel, you're hurting the little guy. But, you know, what the Marxists will tell you, you know, you got to break a few eggs.
Right.
We're reshaping the world. And in that world, the proletariat will have their day. They just need to be patient. There's a little bit of pain before the pleasure. That's all. That's what they'll tell you. John in Grays Lake.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Tucker last week reported on Canada is now forcibly putting people into hotels / internment camps for waiting for COVID tests or if they test positive.
Yeah, so that's been going on for some time, and the way that you get around that, it's a silly system. I mean, we are talking about the land of strange brew. You pay like a $2,000 fine to get out of it.
What?
So it's a stick up job. And if you, the flip side is if you don't, and you're quarantined, you have to pay for, you don't have a negative, you have to pay for the hotel room that they demand that you stay in. And I think it's a 3-night minimum or something. So it ends up being something akin, I mean, it's a little bit less, but something akin to the $2,000. It's just easier and cheaper the 3 days you have to be holed up waiting for your test, because that's what the turnaround time at least was recently, because I know somebody from Canada who is giving me chapter and verse on this. Or you just pay the $2,000 and you just build that into your travel costs if you want to get out of and get back into Canada. That's absolutely happening.
That's crazy.
Absolutely happening. Thanks for the call, John. Yeah, that's right. Will and Skokie.
Hey, how you doing? The way to deal with this is humor. The thing that you, when you played that Oberman quote, you notice how every now and then he just threw in a little adjective or adverb, which made it look like it's totally unhinged. They draw you into their universe, and they set the narrative in your mind that this is the way life really is. And then what you have to do is deal with them with humor and ridicule. Humorous ridicule. I was telling you a couple of weeks ago about the woman at the gas pump who was screaming at me for not wearing a mask, even though she was 12 feet away and, you know, stuff like this. And rather than get drawn into her argument and start yelling back, I just laughed at her and ignored her. So she sat there and screamed and screamed and got louder and louder, and she looked like the fool that way. I had a client the other day who, I won't say the job or I won't say what the client, what part of the left she was with, but we signed the agreement, and I started to do the work, and then she started to come up with all these things where she wanted me to acknowledge her particular psychosis. And I said, I just looked at her, and I realized in my head, she's crazy. I don't want to deal with crazy clients. And I just walked over, picked up the contract and ripped it up and says, may you be well, and I walked out. Then she screamed and yelled, oh, I'm going to sue you because this and this and this and this. And I go, hey, look, we have a contract. You know, the contract doesn't exist. You didn't pay me yet, so the contract doesn't exist. So bye-bye. And just make sure, use humor. turn around and say, dude, seriously, you know, what is this? Where are you coming from? That's the way you deal with it. You deal with the humor. You ridicule and humorously ridicule so they can't accuse you of being mean. Right?
Thanks for the call, Will. I think that's a tool in the toolbox, if you will. But I don't think it's sufficient in and of itself. I think it's part of it. Yes, ridiculing risible figures like Keith Olbermann is perfect. But ridiculing against serious ideologues that have a rather dark agenda for you and your family, I think it's going to have to get beyond that. Just in this context, Charles Barkley, over the weekend during the Final Four coverage on CBS, they got into this boycotting business a little bit and the controversy surrounding the Georgia voting reform law. And here's what Sir Charles had to say about America and race.
Man, I think most white people and black people are great people. I really believe that in my heart. But I think our system is set up where our politicians, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, are designed to make us not like each other so they can keep their grasp of money and power. They divide and conquer. I truly believe in my heart most white people and black people are awesome people. But we're so stupid following our politicians, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. And their only job is, hey, let's make these people not like each other. We don't live in their neighborhoods. We all got money. Let's make the whites and blacks not like each other. Let's make rich people and poor people not like each other. Let's scramble the middle class. I truly believe that in my heart.
I love Charles Barkley.
He's okay.
I had a beer with him once. It was awesome.
I'm sure he's a fun guy to hang around with.
He is.
But is that the proper distillation of what's happening?
I feel like we're pitting Americans against each other, don't you?
Who's we?
I mean the politicians.
Politicians? They're all created equally? You know, I get what Charles is doing here. You know, you want to be post-partisan, so you want to blame both sides. But are both sides equally culpable? No, I don't think so. So I think you have to assign blame according to behavior and responsibility for the problem. And the responsibility for the problem lies overwhelmingly with the Jacobin left, with the Democrat socialists. That is the element that dominates that party. So no, I'm not going to play the game that conservatives or Republicans are trying to pit blacks against whites or whites against blacks the way that the left is trying to pit blacks against whites and so on and so forth. No, that's not what's happening, because there's one side and a lot of Vichy Republicans who go over to that side or who do the bidding of that side on the GOP side that are in the identitarian politics game. There's one side and Benedict Arnolds who run around pretending they're Republicans or conservatives. So, no, it's not equal. I agree with the underlying sentiment, most black people, white people, decent, fair-minded people, trying to get along, trying to treat people fairly, not trying to jackpot one another. But there is a politicized element. It's not just the politicians, but it's the politicized. You don't need to be an office holder to be politicized, to be a political activist, to be an anti-racist. You can be in academia. You can be some pee hat in Hinsdale. There's a lot of walks of life that fall under that general category politician, if you will. But it's not the responsibility is not evenly distributed across the spectrum. No. So he's right about those who are trying to pit races against one another for the purposes of their ascendancy politically and their power expansion. He's right about that. But don't let all sides are to blame kind of thing. I'm standing above it, and I'm just saying all sides are banned. I'm the arbiter. No, I don't think so. This is a brawl. This is a brawl for the culture. And the problem is that those who know better and are disgusted with what's going on, including Sir Charles, are willing to equivocate on the topic. They're willing to say, oh, the responsibility is evenly distributed. Everybody's to blame. And so many on the right are unwilling to take up the fight at all. They just want to be quiet and hope that the neo-Jacobins don't come for them.
I mean, economic sanctions against Georgia. What is wrong with people?
Bob on the north side.
Yeah, hi. I was just calling about the Major League Baseball thing. It's kind of funny because we go there to pick up our tickets, and the first thing you got to do is show your ID to pick up your tickets. Even if the wrong name is on there, they give you a big, you know, they're all fighting with you because you got the wrong name. You got to make sure to get the right guy with the right name and the right ID to get the ticket.
Yep.
And before you even get your ID back in the pocket, you got to bring it back out for to buy the beers. Ridiculous.
Yeah, Bob, next time that happens to you, you know what you do? Scream apartheid. This is apartheid, apartheid. This, what are you, a South African? What are you an Afrikaner from South? Are you PW Bota? What are you? Apartheid, apartheid. I mean, to borrow from Will from Skokie's point about ridicule of the nonsense. I mean, I'm not saying that somebody just asking for an ID to get your tickets is necessarily participating in all this, but Major League Baseball certainly is, isn't it? Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy continues now. And make sure to stay tuned to catch me, Mike Gallagher, coming up at 9, only on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. As Amy's been reminding us all morning, tomorrow is local election day in Chicagoland, in Illinois. School boards, village boards, township boards. Are you paying attention? We've tried to profile as many races as we can, and we'll do some more tomorrow and give people an opportunity, candidates or candidate supporters, an opportunity to call in to talk about their community and the particular offices that are being contested. And we'll do a little bit more here. I mean, just to, again, why is this so important? We can talk about Major League Baseball and boycotts at the federal level. We can talk about $2 trillion funny money plans all day long. What about in your community? Patty Hennick is running for mayor of River Forest on a platform of bringing more low-income Section 8 apartments to the village. Having an affordable housing plan allows subsidized residents to have more discretionary funds to spend. It helps our community economically. Is that right? River Forest homeowners, do you think more subsidized housing in River Forest is going to help the community economically? What do you think it's going to do for your home values in River Forest as if they're not hammered enough with 3 and 4% property taxes as a percentage of a home value? This is called cannibalization by those socialists that River Forest otherwise supports at every level of office. I mean, it's a community represented by race hustler Chris Welch, for God's sakes. Okay. Just thought you should know, for those who are interested in trying to get out of River Forest while the getting's good, Patty Hennick. How about in Glen Ellen? Leafy Glen Ellen. Oh, yeah, DuPage County, which has been completely given over by Vichy Republicans to the left. Robert Bruno is the president of the elementary school district in Glen Ellen, District 41. He's a Marxist. He argues that socialism is more ethical than capitalism. Does anybody know who Robert Bruno is in Glen Ellen? Has anybody paid attention to this? He's an author. He's an academic. He soft-pedaled his support for Marxism when he first ran, but it's pretty straightforward. Yeah. He screeds against profits of capitalists. At least he did as a University of Illinois professor. Uh-huh. Yeah. Paying attention there and to these pea hats that provide his cadre of support. Julie Spiller, who owns a lot, apparently, I don't know. I don't know how she squares this. Julie Spiller in Glen Ellen. Let's name names. She has a little business in town. Home accessory store downtown Glen Ellen. Julie Spiller. Do you know it in Glen Ellen? You know, she's a Marxist. You know, she supports a Marxist having dominion over your children in terms of the curriculum and the way the District 41 elementary schools are run. I doubt many do. In Evanston, a green shoot, a woman, you know, Evanston, first in the nation in reparations, a woman of Congolese descent named Nadona Mubayagi, she's running for school board. And she is running against the identitarian critical race theory curriculum being advanced in School District 65. Do you know about her? A bright spot in District 65 in Evanston, of all places, Nadona Mubayagi. Evanston, River Forest, Glen Ellen. How many other school districts have we covered? Are you paying attention to what's happening at the village and the school board and the township level? Because if you're seeding your community, then it is folly to think you're going to somehow be part of getting your state or your country back. Do we understand? For more on this, let's profile one more candidate. Next door to Glen Ellen in Lombard, school board candidate for District 99. She's also the president and CEO of the Lombard Area Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Melissa Infusino joins us now. Melissa, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hi, good morning. Just to clarify, I'm actually running for Downers Grove District 99 school board.
Oh, sorry, Downers Grove. Yes, right. School board in District 99, but you're the president and CEO of Lombard Area Chamber of Commerce, right? So that's Downers Grove, right? Okay, thank you.
Yes.
What's going on in Downers Grove that prompted you into the race?
I just see our children suffering so much. It's very hard on a parent to walk in to my son's room and see him asleep at his Chromebook, when really there's no reason for these kids not to be in school. And if it were not safe for these kids to be in school, I would absolutely say no way, no how you are going to school. But all the data and all the science points to the fact that these kids need to be in school, because this is keeping them out of school is more detrimental in the long run than, you know, it's killing our children mentally.
And is this the posture of the school board in terms of the concerns from parents like you over the last year has been what?
We were remote until January, and actually a little bit after January, we were still remote. We went on a modified block hybrid schedule where our classes were 80 minutes long. They had four classes a day, and they went to school for two of those classes and were home for two of those classes per day. And they're completely remote on Mondays, and they're moving toward a second modified block schedule after spring break that they're starting this week, where they're still at home on Mondays and they're at school from 8 to 1:30. Our classes are still 70 minutes long, and it's very difficult for the kids to be in class that long. It was very hard for my son to understand, Mom, why are you telling me I can't have screen time? Why do I have to limit my screen time, yet I sit on a computer all day? Where do we draw the line and say, look, these kids need in-person instruction. They need to be face-to-face with their teachers.
And where are you know, your fellow parents and other stakeholders in the system, where are they here? Is there real pushback finally being brought to bear, or are you on an island?
No, there is a lot of pushback being brought up to the school board. A lot of parents are stepping up and saying,
check 1-2, can you hear me?
They're saying a lot of parents are coming back and saying, no, we want our kids in school.
And Melissa, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Sorry about that. We're having some microphone issues here. So did you attend school board meetings prior to this pandemic happening? Were you aware of, you know, how school boards were run and what was going on?
I I did. I actually attended more school boards in the Woodridge district. My daughter is in that district. I attended some there. I did start attending the virtual school board meetings when they were starting to make decisions about going back to school, and this became a real concern.
All right. If you get elected to the school board, though, isn't the end game is to end hybrid learning and to end teaching via computer? Don't you want to go back to books and pens and paper?
I would love to go back to books and pens and paper. And that's the style that many kids learn in, and they're not recognizing the style that every child learns differently. And some kids are flourishing with this. Some kids are doing phenomenally. And there's so many, though, that are not, and I just feel like they're getting left behind.
You're the presidency of the Lombard Area Chamber of Commerce. The business community, the local business community here with respect to Lombard as well as Downers Grove, have they played any role in putting pressure on the local elected officials to be more sensible? It seems to me one of the concerns I have is the business community is going to go to bat to some extent. In some places, it won't go to bat at all. It's folded in with the local authorities. But to the extent they do, they'll go to bat for themselves so they can open. Restaurants can open, so on and so forth. The schools, parents are over here. They'll go to bat for, as you are, for the in-person learning, for curriculum changes perhaps. But never the two shall meet. I mean, you're all residents of the same community. You want good schools. You want a vibrant business community. These are the core institutions along with healthcare of any thriving community. So is there any interplay there where people understand I'm not just a business owner, I'm not just a patron, I'm not just a parent, I'm not just a student. This is there's a tapestry here, and we should stand in solidarity with one another against this small cadre of public officials who are doing things that we dislike.
I've actually seen wonderful support of both the Village of Downers Grove and the Village of Lombard to their business community during all this. It's a tough situation to be in, and I have seen Downers Grove community step up and support their restaurants. I've seen them step up and support their small businesses. I've seen huge promotions and huge pushes in just supporting the small businesses. And being in Lombard, I see even the chamber stepping up to support the small businesses and giving people options. The village has been wonderful with Lombard businesses to help them stay open and stay in business and do what they can to, if they need outdoor tents, if they need to do outdoor seating or anything, they are just really stepping up and helping the restaurant owners.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They don't need outdoor tents, and they don't need outdoor seating if you have people stand for what we know to be true, just as you are with respect to in-person education, what we know to be true about COVID as it relates to young people, as it relates to the classroom setting, what we've known for a long time, and yet people refuse to admit, oh, I'm going to make accommodations, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. No. What we're going to do is we're going to tell the truth. And we're going to make policies and live our lives based on what we know to be true. We're not going to make it based on these silly premises from which the fear-addled start. We're not going to do that anymore. So that's what I don't see happening. That's the sort of moral clarity that I don't see. And frankly, when adults say that's very difficult, well, that's why you're an adult. Because you have to do difficult things. You have to make trade-offs. You have to provide leadership in your life for your kids and your family and your community. And if you don't want to do that, then just admit you're not that person. But don't give me this, it's difficult stuff. And I'm not yelling at you. I'm just sort of talking through you to this larger issue. Don't give me this, it's difficult stuff. Life is difficult. This is where character shows or doesn't.
And I understand completely with that. And like I said, I can't. What I can do is advocate for my businesses in Lombard through the Illinois Chamber, and that's what I'm working on doing. I can also advocate for the kids in school in District 99, which is what I'm trying to do. And even if I don't win the election, I will still be there at the school board meetings holding people accountable, saying where are the tax dollars being spent, and you know, helping them or giving my opinion to make informed decisions and making sure that they are informed and up to date on all everything that is going on with in regards to COVID.
Because, in 99, again, yeah, no, I appreciate that. Although the Illinois Chamber has been terrible throughout this as well, I just want to register that. The Illinois Chamber is a joke. And this is one of the reasons why Illinois is such a joke, is because the business community, generally speaking, not talking about you, not talking about Lombard, generally speaking, full of cowards at the association level. We've seen that with Toya and the Restaurant Association downtown as well. It's a joke. And let's just start telling the truth. I'm tired of trying to coddle people who are telling me their good intentions. Your good intentions don't mean a hill of beans. They paved the road to hell, as I recall. But with respect to 99, what about curriculum? What about what's happening actually when you do get the kids in the classroom with respect to critical race theory and other such things?
Well, I'm not the biggest fan of that. I read some bills that I'm trying to read some bills that have come up and things that have passed, and really it needs to be readdressed. It's not good for our kids as far as, I'm reading a 158-page bill that's telling me I need to teach sex ed in kindergarten. I don't think that's appropriate at all. And I'm sure many parents wouldn't want their children learning this, but how many parents actually know exactly what that bill states?
You're probably the only one.
Well, there's a few, but not many. And so why are we not educating our parents on what these bills actually mean and what they mean for our kids?
She is Melissa Infusino. She's the president and CEO at the Lombard Area Chamber of Commerce and Industry. She's running for school board in Downers Grove in District 99. Melissa Infusino, District 99, Downers Grove. And Melissa, if people want more information on your candidacy, they can go where?
I do have a Facebook page. It is write-in candidate for District 99, Melissa Infusino. You can go there. You can always email me at melissa.infusino@yahoo.com. I mean, actually very easy to find on Facebook.
All right. Melissa Infusino, thanks for joining us, and good luck with your candidacy tomorrow. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.